Whoa.
Good morning. Wait, what's the matter?
Oh, I don't know. You just went,
Good.
Should leave that in. Leave it in.
Good morning, comrade. You're listening to WHIEV LP New Orleans 102.3. This is Good Morning, Comrade. Jeff and Robert on the show. Robert, what is happening, man?
I don't know, man. Tell me what you've been up to. What
me?
You just told me off air. And then I will fill that with what's on my mind, which correlates to that, which we haven't talked about with no show prep.
Okay. I just came from a couple of days up in Northern Virginia. Congratulations to the the Loudoun County workers who just won their union election just last night as of recording. They won. So people in Northern Virginia just won a union, and this also comes off the heels of some Fairfax transit workers, actually people with a Fairfax connector, just won. They were on strike for several weeks, and they just settled and had a victory there as well. So Virginia's been popping off again, just like it's been doing for a while. So yeah, how about you, Robert? What you got going on?
No, that's super cool and productive. The reason why I wanted you to do that is because I have been wasting my limited time on Earth. Well, not say wasted. I'm being facetious there, but I'm playing. I'm role playing a video game that I'm in right. I'm playing right
now.
Are
you talking about the
Yeah, I've been playing. Yeah, I'm playing Helldivers. Which, if anybody doesn't know, it's like Helldivers is a. We couldn't get the license for Starship Troopers, Aliens, or any other Paul Verhoeven movie, so we just or Terminator, so we just made it our own. And it's very like the same way that Paul. I'm not talking about the book, the Robert Heinlein book, which is if we're talking about Starship Troopers, like the Robert Heinlein book. I read it because it was like the only thing. It was not the only thing. It was one of the few things when I was in the Marine Corps. Like on the Commandant's reading list that I actually was like, you know what? I should read this. Let me check it out. And the book, I was like, eh. So what it boils down, the book boils down to fascism good. And if you, it's not like the movie at all, but it's the same thing.
If you know anything about Paul Verhoeven, he's good at doing sort of satire-ish movies that like he takes an initial message of like the sort of, like you mentioned the fascism good sort of angle of that book, and he sort of like he shows the dystopian ends of it and connects it to the way that our society really is.
Well, you know that I found out a little trivia about Starship Troopers. I went down a little rabbit hole. I didn't even know because like Paul Verhoeven's like one of my favorite directors, and except for Showgirls, which is weird. I guess he just wanted to try something like different, and he's like, let me not make a weird sci-fi dystopia, so I'll do this Showgirls. I'm like, all right, cool. But like, even his weird German movies I like. But Paul Verhoeven,
by the way, Elizabeth Berkley, who is Jesse Pano from
and it has Burt Reynolds. It's weird, dude. It's so weird.
Anyway,
but Paul Verhoeven, famously, I didn't know this, but it's like Hollywood legend that he started to read Robert Heinlein's Starship Troopers because, you know, I was like, well, they're giving me a paycheck to make this movie, so I should at least know the source material. He says he didn't even get through a third of it. He was just like, this is stupid. He's like, this is boring and stupid. And Ed Neumeier, the guy who wrote RoboCop, along with his other buddy, I can't think of his name, but Ed Neumeier is such like a unique name that you just, it sticks in your head, especially the many times I've seen RoboCop. He gave Heinlein like the Cliff Notes version, not the literal Cliff Notes, because I don't think there's Cliff Notes for Starship Troopers, but he, God, I'm really aging myself.
Summarized it.
Nobody in our audience under the age of 40 knows what Cliff Notes are.
No, they're Spark Notes now.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. I mean, you're doing college right now, and I don't know.
You're not doing college right then.
I guess not.
You're not sloughing off enough.
Yeah, so he gave him the like you said, the summary of it, and they made he's like, this is fascist, so I'm from Germany. I'm gonna make the movie, but I'm gonna make a satire of fascism. And Ed Neumeier's in the movie. He is the guy that you don't see him get executed, but you see his like sham trial, and it's like sentence death tonight, all net, all channels. That's Ed Neumeier. I was like, that's so cool. That's like a little trivia. But yeah, so he wrote the
my fascist utopia is or dystopia rather is The Running Man. That's one of my favorites.
That's Running Man and Starship Troopers exist in the same universe. Running Man is just Running Man is just pre we developed fast FTL travel, faster than light travel. But they obviously exist in the same universe. Like, I mean, they literally don't, but like it's the same 80s. Like, it's the same, even though Starship Troopers is a movie from the late 90s, it's an 80s vibe movie.
No, Verhoeven is an 80s coded director.
Yeah. And that's not that's my favorite things are 80s action movies.
For people who don't know what The Running Man is, what is that?
The Running Man is, it's Hunger Games, but good. So, just think of that. You know who wrote.
If you go to prison, essentially, or you get arrested, yeah. You essentially get sent to into like a battle zone where you have just like gladiators trying like actually kill you.
That story, that movie, that book. I'll talk about the book for a sec too, which I've read, and it's really good. It's actually really good. It's a launching pad for so many different media franchises. I can list 5 different video games: The Grid, the Smash TV, and its sequel, its spiritual sequel, The Grid. Like I said, Hunger Games, Battle Royale, Squid Games. We've seen this story over and over. That's another reason why I'm not into the Hunger Games. I'm not into the Hunger Games because I'm a 42-year-old man. Like, I've seen this. I'm glad that people enjoy it, but it's like, I don't know. It doesn't really have anything to tell me. And then also, what I find super weird is the people who are like really under the Hunger Games are either like fashy libs, like fashy adjacent liberals, are just straight fascists. They almost watch it as some kind of like fantasy world. Like, oh yeah, they don't watch it like that, but that's like they project. Like, their politics don't align with what that movie's trying to say. And that goes back into my point about this game. That's a good way to circle back around. Mm-hmm. But, did you know who wrote The Running Man? Sorry. You know who wrote that?
That's Stephen King, right?
Absolutely. But he wrote it under his real name.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's Richard Bachman or whatever. But, okay. That's his real name.
The thing about The Running Man for me that makes it way cooler, despite the optics and the 80s vibe of it and everything else, the fact that you have like Arnold Schwarzenegger as the star of that movie and Jesse Ventura and like all these like huge stars and like
that's so good.
It's just like such a like
Jim Brown.
Like, yeah, Jim Brown's in the movie. Good, like dude. He's like super cool.
Odd Job's in it.
Yeah.
He's Sub-Zero. True.
Yeah. Oh,
so good, dude. And the Dynamo guy was actually an opera singer for real.
That's crazy.
Like, that's not like dubbed over when he's singing.
I love the idea of like a opera singing like Italian man who just like shoots electricity out of his fingers.
I mean, he was somehow like the lamest a stalker, but then also the best. The lamest and the best at the same time. I don't understand.
But it like had all the showmanship of like professional wrestling. Like, literally Jesse Ventura was like a key character in it. And like, it's like basically what if just like professional wrestlers just like were the ones that did state executions instead of.
And then Richard Dawson is the game show host where that's not a character. You know, that's him. He was just being Richard Dawson when like the Family Feud cameras went off.
Yeah, it was
like,
literally.
That's him, dude.
This is your edition of Old Guy Corner on this week's Good Morning Combat.
Who else is in it? Not Frank Zappa, but like, is it Frank Zappa? Frank Zappa's in it. Because it's whatever.
It's Dweezil Zappa.
It's Dweezil, yeah. Because he's the resistance leader guy who the resistance somehow lives in the zone. Well, I always thought that was kind of nonsense. Like, how could they never get found in the zone, like in the actual like combat zone? But
it's a movie.
We're doing Israel Palestine right now, and that's those true. Guys, and like Hamas just blew up a building with like 15 IDF guys in it. Dang. And like, so they are active. They are out. They are out there. But
never underestimate the people's will to survive.
Exactly. So my point, and I didn't want to go down like, you know, movie rabbit hole, but now you have an idea. Like, this game has the same politics. It's all about upholding capitalism against the socialist bugs, and because they all work in a hive, and the robots are also communist, and we have to, we're spreading liberty through domination, and it's just all it's the same themes as the Starship Troopers movie. And so people have gotten really into it. I'm one of them myself, to where I'm like role playing as a fascist, and I'm like actively making video propaganda, like propaganda videos, posting memes. I was at the gym and I was in a meeting to like how we're going to like do the war, because okay, so how the game works is there's a robot side and a bug side. And they're both advancing on Super Earth, and there's a huge, like, that's where we are. It's a huge, like, war map of all the planets they're taking. So if you think about, like, again, showing my age, the old Star Wars Battlefront, the good ones, remember that planetary conquest mode?
I never played those games.
So, okay, I'm trying to think of a game that would be an analog. But I'll just explain it. So yeah, the robots are constantly pushing. The bugs are constantly pushing from the other side of the solar system. And we are constantly pushing them back. So there's a push-pull of us liberating planets and spreading democracy, managing democracy.
You're welcome.
Yeah, exactly. So there is, and then the robots and the bugs take those planets back. They invade other planets. So there's literally a guy, a game master, like a role-playing game, like Dungeons and Dragons, and they said there's going to be, they didn't expect the game to be so big, so now they're hiring a whole team that just manages the bug and the bot side of the war. So they're like, oh, we're going to deploy here, we're going to deploy there, we're going to pull out of here, I see that the players are attacking here, we're going to, defend that. And so it's a whole, like, live universe that's going on. And so, like I said, I was at the gym on the treadmill in a meeting of how we're going to like liberate this planet, and this is all happening in real time. And I just noticed that, here's my point, here's the point after I've set all this up, the same frustrations that I've had all my life in leftist organizing and just political organizing and just even corporate work culture, it's the tyranny of, and we've experienced this in like the democratic socialist, meetings that we've been in. It's the, and I ended up like sending one of the mods a paper written by this, this famous feminist. I can't think of her name right now. It's the tyranny of leaderlessness.
Yeah.
And so what I'm trying to say is structurelessness. That's it. So wait, a structure will form no matter what. So you've got all these people in the game who are, they have authority. They are moderators. They can delete posts. They're holding meetings. They can mute people. They can kick people out of the server, but they're trying to act like they don't have any power. They're trying to act like, yeah, we don't tell people what to do. Like, so if you go in there in the meeting and you say, hey, everybody, we need to attack Planet X, blah, blah, blah. Everybody needs to go there because that's the strategy and that's the thing we need to do. And the moderators, the council, one of the, will say, hey, we don't tell, this is just a game. We don't tell people what to do. We only suggest, and I'm like, but by you not telling, and this person wasn't me, by the way, but it's just what I noticed, by not telling people what to do, by making that the rule, you've now told people what to do. So now you've set up boundaries. You set up your own little fiefdom, and you're pretending that it's not, that you're not an authority figure, and you're making authoritative decisions that nobody knows the rules of, that you're making up on the spot. And now it just makes everybody mad. Instead of just having a structured rule, list of rules that everybody, agrees on. We can agree on the rules through direct democracy, but we shouldn't be able to agree on how you know, when they're going to be implemented. They're either implemented for all or implemented for none. And so my point is with all this, I'm like, I'm doing this for entertainment, and it's like making my blood pressure go up because I'm like, this is like every leftist and work Zoom call I've ever been on, and where everybody's just wasting time. This could have been an email, and people like either don't have anything productive to say. They want it. They're lonely and they want to hear themselves talk, or they don't know when to shut up. And the leadership doesn't want to just lay down the law. And then it finally gets to a point where they do lay down the law, and everybody's like, well, where did this come from? And my point is, I don't know how you do your job. I don't know how you put up with it, because I am not built for that. I am not. I am too hot-headed. I've always kind of considered myself an authoritarian leftist too. And I don't know if that's nature or nurture. I was really at work trying to think about it today. Like, how did I get to this point where like the, I don't want to say feckless, but the inefficiency of a group in a video game has got my blood pressure up, got my heart beating fast. And I don't know. It's because maybe I was brought up in a liberal household, but then like I was shown a lot of, you know, like my favorite memories of my dad are sitting around watching Aliens or watching, what's the one, Zulu, watching, you know, Sand Pebbles, all these like glorious war movies and stuff like that, you know, A Bridge Too Far. And so it's like, maybe my upbringing, like that is how I got to my politics. But then my like organizational skills are like military. Because I did join the Marine Corps out of high school, but that wasn't like a lifelong dream of mine. It was just something I was like, you know what? I want to see if I can soldier, and this is the place to do it. And I did it. And the one thing, even though it sucked, I wouldn't tell anybody to go do that. The one thing I like about it is like, for the most part, for 99% of the time, you always knew where you stood. Like, you always knew, like, if they were like, hey, you idiot, you are doing a bad job, you know, and they would use a lot more colorful language than that. Like, I know exactly what it is. And they're like, hey, good job, devil dog.
I'm picturing you being yelled at like Arlie Ermey.
Oh my God. That's all I ever got was yelled at. All I ever got. And those poor guys who like my poor like supervisors, my sergeants and staff sergeants and gunnery sergeants and warrant officers who used to yell at me. Like, I really do understand. Like, they did it because they liked me, because I was like a good guy who would follow orders, but I just was a kid. I was also 19. So like, what do you do with a kid who's like, you know, my main objective was going home to the barracks at night and playing Madden. Like, I wasn't locked on as a Marine. I was still a, you know, a 19, 20 year old kid. Yeah. But I don't know how you organize, man. I couldn't do it. I could tell people what to do and have responsibility over those decisions, and then I can be a follower. I like, you know, talking about the DSA meetings, like how many times, like I even came up with a thing from there's a bar we used to go to. It's now called Velveteen in New Orleans. It used to be P-Rogues. And I used to say, you know, is this a DSA meeting conversation or is this a P-Rogues conversation? Is this the after the meeting conversation? Yeah. Because we shouldn't be wasting time on everybody's little pet projects. Not that it's a waste of time. It's just not efficient for the thing, like the main thing that the leadership has decided that needs to get done.
Keep
so again,
it
I don't moving. Know how I don't know how you do your job. I would lose my mind.
I'll tell you, it's a lot less like DSA when, you know, when it's actual like a job you have to do. It's a lot more of a lot more clear when you actually have workers that you're dealing with. And that's all I can really sort of like throw in there. Because when there's workers involved and there's people's jobs and people's lives at hand, there's real stakes at hand as well. And it's not to say that there's not stakes with like some of the stuff that DSA does, but a lot of times, not, and again, it's not all the time, but like in many situations, and I'm speaking generally here, the stakes of something that, that, you know, you're fighting for within DSA, the stakes are like not as directly connected to if we get a contract, we can get raises and job protections and like all these other things for workers. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It's just, I think a lot of it for me, again,
it's like, a lot more clear because
it's the yeah, you know. I can deal with bureaucracy and I can deal with that. Like we're all have, but I just want, I want to get the Cliff's Notes version. I don't need the, have you seen the TikTok woman who's kind of become a micro celebrity, the corporate Karen or whatever? It's like cute little black lady, and she does like the whole thing is people ask her questions like they're in a work meeting, and she answers them. So be like, hey, I thought we were gonna get new desk, and she'll be like, well, oh, I understand your concern there, and it is a priority to get, you know, to find new desk for everyone. But what we're asking right now is for everyone to just pull to get, you know, that kind of language. If you ever want to, like, that would be what the CIA would use to break me. Mm-hmm. Like, if you,
torture.
It really would. If you ever want to see me lose my mind, like, when people talk like that, especially because I can think, like, in this group, they're talking like that. At my job, they talk like that. In a lot of political organizing I do, they talk like that. And it's like, when I hear that tone, it's like that part in Scarface where, like, Tony Montana sees that guy put his hand on his sister's butt, and that, like, that music plays and his eyes get real. Like, that's what's going on in my head. That,
you get triggered.
Yeah, I'm just like,
you get triggered.
I'm about to lose it. Like, can we just be for real? BFFR right now. Like, come on.
I think it's actually, like, to be, I mean, maybe, you know, maybe you'll agree with me, maybe you won't. And, you know, people who are listening also, if you give us some feedback. But, like, I think that's actually a class language that's utilized. And I don't know. It's like something that is like, I mean, you're from working class background. I'm from working class background. Like, when you hear things like that, and, like, you know that when those kinds of conversations are taking place, those sort of, like broad, like, open conversations, that's essentially, like, they want you to give them something, and they can steer you to the conclusion that the meeting was already decided that was going to be going in before, right? So it is, in a certain sense, like, authoritarian. However, like, again, it's hiding the ball.
Right. Like I said, I don't have a problem with, like, authoritarian spaces. And what I mean by that is,
be straight up about it is what you mean.
If you're going to be a leader, then you have to lead from the front. This whole idea of just like, oh, let's all hold hands and this is going to be a round table. No, that's not how any of this gets done. The reason why the military is effective, the reason why, you know, fascist dictatorships are effective is because it's top down. It's, this is what's been decided. This is the action we're taking. When I mean effective, I don't equate that as good. Equate that as it is what it is. It's effective.
Effectiveness is neutral in terms of morality.
Right. But I just, that language, I think, kills so, especially in a society where we all have, you know, either by our own vices, we're super distracted and super stretched out, or just, you know, modern life has just stretched us out so far and our time is so limited. It's like, let's get to the point as quick as possible. And then you tell me what you want me to do. And then I will decide if that's something I want to be a part of. I'm already in the building. You don't need to sell me. And that's another thing. I feel like I'm being sold, and I hate, as I say, as a prior salesman, I know when you're trying to sell me, and it makes me want to vomit.
And you're not going to tell me that you're selling to me, which is the most, that's like extra, because it feels like they're being, so right. One of the other parts of that as well.
That's why Kamala Harris just, like, drives me up the wall, because it's like, you took a literal middle manager and made her the middle manager of the world. I mean, it's no better than what we deserve.
Yeah.
Just hearing somebody who's just doped off of Xanax talking about TPS reports or whatever, and come on, man.
Yeah. The only time that I remember her ever feeling like she was half alive is when she was talking about, like, locking up parents whose kids didn't go to school. That was like when you see, like, the light in her eyes is like, this is the thing I like doing. This is the thing that brings me joy in my life. And she, like, laughs about it. Remember that video?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, I just wonder.
That was, like, genuinely alarming.
Do, like, other people feel like me? Because sometimes I feel like a pod person and I don't feel human.
I mean, you are.
But then other times I'm just like, no, the world is crazy.
No, it is.
What is this?
Well, I will say another thing too is that, like, that you know, the very sort of like slow sort of sales job that you were just talking about when it comes to that, the people that, that operate like that, who are generally in leadership, have the ability or the endurance or the stamina to sort of like go to several sets of these meetings to have the ability essentially to take a longer time and bend this arc of work, because they potentially they're and you know, people who are from, you know, more of the upper classes have the ability to spend more time on more of these freaking meetings, and like that's sort of part of the deal as well. That makes sense. And so, like, if honestly, if people just like decide, like you just did, logically, to like, well, this is a waste of my time. I can be doing anything else with my life right now. Anything. And you self-select to leave, then that means that the people that are steering the thing in the direction that you don't want will have one less potential opponent.
Like, I was so weird. Okay. Like, I went to a meeting for my fake Galactic War last night, and then after that I had a meeting with like national meeting to attend with Jewish Voices for Peace, and God bless them and all the work they're doing. Like, I am with them. I pay dues. I am a card carrying member of JVP. But when they had 1,000 people in the chat and one of the speakers decided to play a song, I logged off. I'm just like, what is this? I can't. You got 1,000 people here in front of you waiting to be literally be told what to do.
How do we stop the genocide?
And you're going to play a song. What? Why? Are you doing this for your own ego? Are you doing this because you think, like, again, you're in the whole, like, this is a round table and we all have a valid input here. And I'm like, no, but we don't.
You're super effing valid, sweaty, and also, like, I do think a lot of times when it comes to that kind of stuff, people who do that think they're being genuinely, like, inspirational, and it's just the cringiest thing I've ever seen.
Oh, my goodness. The only thing I could think of was, like, oh, man, I was like, the poor CIA agent who has to, like, sit in here.
Good.
And take notes. Yeah, I know, right? Just waste their time.
make them earn that freaking CIA money, I guess. I mean, like, if that's the case, if it weeds CIA, which it won't weed CIA agents out because they're, you know, because they're actually paid for this. But what it ends up doing, like, is it ends up weeding out actual people.
You know what? Maybe I'll keep that in the back of my head. If I ever, like, lead or, like, head a grassroots organizing, you know, group or whatever, in my meetings, I'll have like CIA breaks. I'll be like, okay, and now for the next, until I say otherwise, so don't tune out, we're going to watch an episode of Paw Patrol, and then we're all going to discuss the ethics of the Paw Patrol and how it relates, and literally do that. Just be like, hi CIA agents, hi minders, just want to give you a little something to waste your time.
Yeah, making sure the ways to use that government money for put your taxpayer dollars to work.
Malcolm used to say that. What's that famous Malcolm X thing? He says, look at everybody in front of me. He says, I see we got a lot of friends. We also got a lot of enemies. He's like, you don't get to be this size without having a bunch of enemies in the crowd.
Yeah, haters make you famous. Yeah. You are listening to Good Morning Comrade. This is 102.3. LP New Orleans. What's up, Robert? You saying something?
No, I'm saying that's my rant.
Cool.
I just wanted to like lift you up and be like, you were out here in the trenches doing the work that I could never do for sure.
I'm just a digital boy. I just post on the internet. That's fine. My job. And take pictures and stuff. I got the easy job. So really quickly though, to just sort of talk about what's been going on the past couple of weeks. I mean, we talked last week about Uncommitted in Michigan, and 100,000 people in Michigan voted for Uncommitted. They would rather vote for nobody than for Joe Biden. And the following Tuesday, 2 days ago as a recording, there was more. I think it was Minnesota had another, what, 40,000 or something?
Yes, sir. They had a higher percentage.
Yeah, it was like
fewer votes overall because there's just fewer people who voted in the primary, but they had a much higher percentage than even Michigan did. And then really have to count all those votes. I mean, if you're voting for Marianne Williamson and that other scumbag who's also pro-genocide, that's also a protest. Yeah, Dean Phillips. That's also a protest vote against Biden. I don't understand Marianne Williamson. I think she's just...
He dropped out.
Oh, she did? Good. I'm glad. Because, like, I want to like her, but then, like, I'm like, are you just trying to gun for Jill Stein's spot? Like, is Jill Stein... this is morbid, but I'm like, is she sick? Are you just a Jill Stein clone that was just, like, brought up in a lab? Because this is stupid. And I don't mean, like, she shouldn't run for president. What I mean is, if she got more votes than she thought but after dropping out in before Michigan, and she was like, wow, look how many votes I got. What she should have done was said, okay, all you Marianne Williamson people, I'm going to drop out, and then I am now going to campaign for uncommitted. Like, that's what she should have done. If you're telling me she dropped out now, I mean, I think it's too late after Super Tuesday. I think she could have had a bigger effect on the uncommitted / you know, whatever your state's, you know, equivalent is that on the ballots that she was on, if she would have dropped out and told her people who were going to vote for her no matter what to do that.
Yeah, I don't remember what I guess she was running, at least on her platform, was a ceasefire type stuff. But I know that some of the things that she said, I know about the way she sort of framed things, was like, you know, classic liberal Zionism, which, I mean, again, liberal Zionism is bad. And it's definitely, you know, not the solution to any of our problems. But I think being for, like, it shows, I guess, where Biden administration currently is. They're like, they're losing the liberal Zionists, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, she's a freak, but she's the least freakiest person who is officially, like, in the race.
Like, we saw, I mean, almost like a move by the, I mean, this is sort of like palace intrigues type stuff, but, like, we know we were joking earlier about Kamala Harris. I mean, she does have a team of actual sharks that work for her.
Absolutely.
And, like, they were actually, it seemed, last night, sometime this past week, like, trying to, you know, essentially push for a stronger position on Palestine that got sort of moderated by the Biden administration. And I don't know. It just sort of, like, I think that even, like, the people that are surrounding somebody, like a vice president of the United States, realize that, like, in, like, young people, if you ever want to win young people over, as is the Democrats, the future of it cannot be like a pro-genocide type of Zionism. It has to be like the sort of, like, you know, denounce Netanyahu and, like, you know, roll, you know, like do the velvet glove as opposed to the iron gauntlet approach to colonialism.
Well, I mean, the theories that I've heard, because as soon as she, I mean, when she was on the Edmund Pettus Bridge talking about, we need a ceasefire.
Yeah.
For at least 6 weeks. Yeah. And I'm just like, come on. I'm like, come on. Again, her talk is already, I'm on guard. Hearing that voice, I'm already on guard because I hear it all day at work. But what she said was gobbledygook and nonsense. But what I've heard is there's a couple reasons, like you said, palace intrigue. There's a couple reasons why she might be doing it. One, in case Joe Biden drops dead. Two, in case Joe Biden goes up on stage and tonight for the State of the Union or in a debate with Trump and falls on his face. Mm-hmm. Three, 2028.
Yeah,
I'll run for president.
So most likely,
it doesn't hurt her to and her team to push back against. Biden has made, that's another thing. Like, Biden has made himself so unpopular that his own vice president, who, you know, they were a marriage of convenience anyway. His own vice president is now, can now push against him. Yeah.
Do you remember when she, like, cooked him for being in favor of busing? Like,
It made the most sense, though. Like, everybody was super surprised that she was the VP pick. And I'm like, no, this makes the most sense. Like, I'm like, Biden was Obama's vice president, so, because he was the medicine for racists to make the first black president go down.
Yeah.
And then she is the same thing. She is his Biden. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, yeah, Joe Biden sucks. He's old. He's said a lot of racist things. So bring on the black lady.
Right.
It's like, all right, yeah, I see what you're doing here. She could have the worst politics of all time; it wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah, and she has pretty bad politics.
Her politics are atrocious.
They're almost like mirror image of each other. Like, Biden was like is what the old guard of the Democratic Party was supposed to be in a new face of the, you know, like the Biden first black president administration.
Yeah.
And then like on the other side of it, you have like the old guard of the Democratic Party. And then you have what you want the future of the party to look like, which is to represent like black women and stuff like that, to like the woke party essentially. And like, that's sort of like what functionally speaking, the politics are not that different from one another. But like that, they're trying to like make a very smooth transition with these sort of personnel decisions when it comes to that. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. It's like I would call, you know, I would have no problem calling her a diversity hire, the same way I would call Joe Biden a diversity hire for for Barack Obama, like to diversify. Hey, we're not, you know, when you get the guy with the Muslim name, like he all white people aren't going to be put to death.
You need one of 30 Strom days. You need one of Strom Thurmond's best buddies to hang around.
Exactly. I mean, we're joking, but that's exactly what it is. Oh, you're not. Yeah, that's not what I mean. It's exactly what it was. I understood what it was. We all understood what it was, and it was just like, but now here we are, and now with all this foolishness. We have now reached the end of the line of lesser of evil, you know, lesser of two evils voting, and it only cost us 30,000 plus Palestinian civilians.
And it's still and counting. I mean, it's not
and stopped. Counting and counting.
I mean, like, again, the only thing that the Biden administration, not even directly from him, is putting on the table is a 6-week pause. It's not actually a ceasefire. Like
it's
that.
So garbage. Yeah, I see how it's framed too. I see how like because the first thing I do when I come into work this in the morning and steal time from my employer, I make you know I go take a poop. I make a big cup of coffee. I drink a huge glass of water with Metamucil because I'm old, and I look at Google
Paul
News.
Robert.
Yeah, and I'm like on Google News, and you know it's framed as Hamas has rejected. Ceasefire, and I'm like, no. Israel has rejected Hamas's terms for a ceasefire is the correct framing. And if you even want to be spicier than that, you could be like, I don't know why would Hamas go for the banana in the tailpipe at this point? Why would they go for some half raggedy deal that's just going to end up getting more Palestinians bombed anyway? When one. They're winning. They're winning on the ground. All the Palestinians are dying. The civilians are dying because that's all the IDF can do is kill civilians. But Hamas is still effective. They're still sniping IDF soldiers on the daily. There's rumors that Israel's run out of armor and now they've got like.
Don't worry, more is on the way.
Not Humvees, but like personnel carriers from like the 70s and 80s. Out there now because all their armor's been destroyed and they're getting wrecked militarily and they're losing the propaganda battle and they're losing the political battle and you know their funder, even though we just sent them more money, is turning on them. It's like they're losing on all ends. So why would Hamas give them any conditions? And why would Hamas, I mean not conditions, but why would Hamas give them any consolation at this point? Why would any concession? It makes no sense. Yeah, it's we are so far, and anybody who doesn't recognize this, how done the apartheid state of Israel is living in a delusional dream world. They are done. They are finished. They are over. If you have, I'm being dead serious. I'm not trying to be spicy, you know, because like I said, my dad's Jewish. I want an Israel that he can go visit. and not have people thinking he's either, and it shouldn't matter if he was Arab, or it shouldn't matter if he was a Muslim, or like they're just be like, oh, there's an American black guy, like, you know, F him, like, we don't want anything to do with him. I want a place where he can go and he won't be treated like he's in the Jim Crow South, because the poor guy, he thinks his yarmulke would help him out over there. It absolutely would not. But you know, I want an Israel that he can go and visit his religious home, and that is looking further and further away from, at least in the near future, like, it's going to happen. Because if you've got people who live in Israel, I'd be trying to get out, because this is not going to end well for the state of Israel. Like, they are going to be cut off. What we talked about when this started, you know, on October 8th, when the bombs started falling, was, you know, why is the U.S. letting its client state, you know, dog walk them? And it's now the boat is turning. It's turning way too slow. But now it really feels like there's only one guy, and his name is Joseph Robinette Biden, who is standing in the way of a two-state solution, or even a one-state solution, and you're just in the apartheid state.
Yeah,
like, seems like at this point it is just Biden, because nobody else wants to get close to this. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to. You want to be Kristen Gillibrand and get yelled at for, like, you want to be that Schiff, whoever, the guy who just he came in first in the California primary.
Adam Schiff.
Okay, he had to stop. He couldn't even finish his speech, his victory speech, because he was getting shouted down so hard. He had to come off. He had to put his head down, tuck his tail between his legs, and go off the stage. These people aren't built for that. They don't want that. Our relationship with Israel has run its course. It is over. It is done. We will find some new dirty regime to prop up. It just won't be Israel. And when that finally happens, and Israel thinks they're going to buck up, and all these countries around them are going to be like, turn around because America has left you here looking stupid, it's not going to go well for that country. The best possible scenario right now is apartheid ends and Israel becomes a one state, or they do a two state solution. And there's so many, and like, it seems like the vast majority of people in Israel and right now, and then also in the in their government, do not want that. They say, we'd rather die than have that. And I'm like, bro, you might get your wish, because this is, how can you see that this can't last? And the only reason why you don't want to kill all the Palestinians is because you need cheap labor, which is, honestly, that's the thing I keep swirling around in my head. It's like, they really don't even want to kill. They want to keep just enough people to keep servile, to have to come across the border every day to wait 4 hours to work for whatever near slave wages they work for. And it's like, God, dog, y'all won't even let the people rest in death. It's evil, man.
And well, they won't even do the Biden administration. They won't even do the things that are necessary to keep the apartheid going. That's what we're saying, and what the liberal Zionists identify, like that, like, you by doing this genocide, by attacking these Palestinians, you're actually imperiling the project of like settler colonial Israel. And making things more dangerous. Now, like you mentioned, like a two-state, one-state solution, like part of the two-state specifically is like straight up like Israeli propaganda, because they'll say that they want the two-state solution over and over again when they, you know, continue to send settlers into the West Bank and make it impossible to actually functionally be able to do that. And at this point, I mean, if you ask me, it would be impossible because of the amount of settlers. What are you going to do? Like, eject all of the settlers from the West Bank? If you could do two states, how are you going to do that? You know?
No, you're right. You're right. So, and like, that is the part that is actually complicated. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know.
You need to have a single state. I don't care what you call it. You can call it Palestine with equal rights. Israel, Palestine. All for everybody involved. That's the only way to get out of that. And like, all you got to do is not have like, all you got to do is not have freaking apartheid. Like, just end.
But the problem with that is, it's not a problem. It would be the best.
You need a transition plan.
Yes, I mean that. But when I say a problem, I mean the problem for racist Zionists is that when you do that, and you still want to, and you want to keep up this veneer of being a liberal democracy, that means you have to let the people. It's the same thing that we went through here in America after slavery. Now you're saying Palestinians get a vote.
Yep.
Now you're saying the people who are the ethnic majority are now going to vote what your country's going to look like.
Yep.
Girls don't like that. Yeah, exactly.
Same with South Africa. I mean, they're still, I mean, to this very day, I mean, even in America, to this very day, there's, you know, resegregationists that are biding their time in South Africa. They're apartheid, you know, people who are part of apartheid who are still kind of waiting in the wings to just try and boost to for their moment to strike, essentially, so that, you know, to where they can essentially seize control of the government and roll back the clock. It's always the constant forever struggle. You know, a lot of people, you know, the way that Democrats even talk about Trump, like, it's not entirely wrong from the perspective of that he does represent like a revanchist, like super racist, like part of the country who wants to essentially do racial governance. Now, is that actually a big enough threat to happen from the perspective of actually implementing that kind of and you know, that kind of neo Jim Crow? I don't know. Look what's happening in Louisiana right now. Look what's happening in Florida. Look what's happening in many states. I think it's going to happen along these state lines a lot more quickly than it's going to happen in the federal government.
No, I mean, I agree, but it's also, I think, the last gasp of a dying empire, like the stuff we've always said. And I feel bad about that, and I don't want people to be hurt. So we as leftists have to organize and make sure we can protect as many people as possible from, you know, this toothless blind tiger that's going to try to wreck as much, do as much damage on its way out as it possibly can.
Yeah. And it can do a lot of damage, and it will do a lot of damage. Like, when we talk about how, you know, like, Western American hegemony is on the decline, I mean, Western American hegemony is not going to go quietly. That's when it's probably the craziest and most dangerous, because we do have nukes. We see that we have decline, and when you have, you know, like people like Marco Rubio and people like Trump and people who like don't know how to lose or don't want to ever lose and think that America is and should be the, you know, the greatest power in the world, they're going to do some crazy stuff to try and to try and flail as that decline takes place. And what do you do to you know, mitigate that?
No, you ain't lying. I mean, that's, you know, that's exactly what I was saying. It's the same as it ever was, like, always in history. It's weird to know that we're at kind of the end of the empire, and this is the thing that does it. But, you know, there's
the beginning
lot
of the decline, at least.
Yeah, a new world is literally struggling to be born. I mean, it's going to be studied, you know, like the uncommitted in Michigan, not even the liberal spin doctors could put a, you know, they couldn't put a spin on it. They tried as hard as they could, but the White House is responding. They're responding inadequately, you know, building a port in a makeshift port in Gaza.
I just read about that. What's going on there?
Trash, dog. So we're going to build a port, a seaport, to get on the Gaza shore.
Palestinians have wanted a port in Gaza since for how long?
Brother, where was this on October 6th? Yeah. You know, like, what I'm saying? If the U.S. would have done, like, honest to God, I'm 100% serious. If the U.S. would have been like, look, we're building you, where I tell you what, we still give all this, like, money and arms to Israel, but we're building a municipal airfield, and we're building a port in that's for us to use, and then also for the Palestinians to use. And Israel, if you got two words to say about it, square up, because I bet you don't. And I'd have been like, let's go. I'd have been like, that rocks. Because again, it goes into my theory of, you're telling me it's all Israel and you are our client state, so we'll do as we please. Or you're telling me that that's not Israel and you want to invade a place that's not yours and push people that aren't your people into the sea, well, then you have no say in what goes on there and we'll just do as we please there. So it's like you can't have it both ways. If we would have done that, but now it's too late for all that. We are so far beyond food aid, construction aid, we're temporary ceasefires. We have zoomed past a permanent ceasefire. We are now on two state. We are now on free Palestinian state or bust. That's it. That's all people are going to settle for. That's all Hamas is going to settle for. That's all the rest of the world is going to settle for. That's all people who aren't freaks in America are going to settle for, which is the majority of the Democratic Party.
I guess the question is,
Israel has accelerated their own doom.
I guess the question on that point, like, is there a path towards Palestinian liberation that doesn't include ceasefire at some point? Surely,
well, it can't be. The way that ceasefire is framed, the framing of it now. We're gonna do it for 6 weeks, and we're gonna do a ceasefire, and then we're gonna talk about this and that, and
we're gonna see how
many hostages are here, and no. We're not doing none of that, especially while they're winning. We ain't doing none of that. No,
politically and militarily.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not. No, that would be suicide for the Palestinian resistance. There's no reason to. So
yeah. So yeah, that's a little bit of a scary couple of options down here because the Biden administration has been like absolute. They haven't even budge on the idea that Israel has the ability to just like impose its will on Gaza. I mean, even when the leaders when Netanyahu or Ben Gavir or any of these freaks come out and say literally, no, we ain't joking around, we're just like trying to erase the Palestinians, that is our land, we're taking it and we're gonna kill all these people, like the Biden administration is just like, Israel has a right to defend itself, you know, like that has been the never-ending thing. And the best that you're gonna get, while the United States is sending billions of dollars to Israel to do all this, and sending billions of dollars of supplies, and you mentioned that they're running out of armor or whatever, they're going to get that restocked really soon. I just saw something today about that. The best that Biden administration can do is be like, well, he just called Netanyahu an a-hole in a private meeting or something like that. Like, that's all you get. Like that, and the optics of that. And again, also on the political front, like people, you think people don't see that and think like, bro, you're supposed to be the guy in charge here, Joe Biden. You're the president of the United States. Israel is supposed to be one of our allies, and you're getting wrecked. You're getting owned. Like, and Trump's entire thing is, I'm the alpha. I'm the boss, or whatever.
Right.
You know, it's not even like it's not even to say that he would have a better position on this, but at least he wouldn't look like a. I can't say the word on here.
I know, but that's the Biden team's new thing now. Is they leaked out the strategy's going to be to take Trump to the mat and goad him into a fight. Like they're going to beat him up or something. I'm like, y'all are so weak. Like y'all, the weakest leadership of all time. Like again, talking about Israel Palestine. We can send you all this money to kill people and. And we can throw all this weight around to make sure that cargo ships get past the Houthis unscathed. But golly gee, we have to beg and ask and for permission to go into Israel and drop food out of the sky. And golly gee, we wouldn't want to make the Israelis mad, so we'll just be over here on the shore setting up our little beach base. And I'm like, are we America or are we not? Like, I don't. Bro, I don't understand it. I do understand it because it's what we talk about all the time. This is the Democratic neoliberal ultimately playbook. I'm going to stand in the middle of the road and then get shocked when I get hit by traffic on both sides.
Yep. And then, you know, and then when people are understandably like, well, this is a losing policy and you're actually not appealing to any normal people and you look like a bunch of losers and you keep telling us like the, you know, the only alternative to what we're giving you, which is nothing, is like, again, you know, Trump and like all this other stuff, right. Like, I mean, at some point people are going to just tell you where to go. And then what you do from that is you just essentially blame the people that you're already effing over and by not representing them and not giving them an actual alternative and like, not actually giving them a way out and trying to divide them between like, you know, the Panera Bread moms that you're actually trying to represent, you know, in these like, you know, in these purple districts or whatever.
Well, that's the thing too. So you've got all these people who are still stuck in, you know, they're still stuck a year ago and from last year to 1948, they're thinking, well, I got to cuddle up with Israel for as long, you know, as hard as possible, these politicians, or they'll, you know, they won't get either won't give me money or B, they'll back my opponent. I'm like, but now you're going to lose anyway. Look at Katie Porter got drafted. Nope. Smoked. Take your whiteboard and get it out of here. And, you know, and used to be one of the stars of the party. Like, we used to share Katie Porter memes and all that kind of stuff. But you're like, oh, yeah, Israel has a right to defend itself. Bye. Get it. Gone. You're gone. It doesn't matter how much money AIPAC is giving you or your opponent when you can't even make it through the second stage of the jungle primary in California.
Yeah.
So, peace out. Fetterman, you're next. You're gone. And it's just like all these people who thought they were going to, you know, they're going to go into D.C. and be, you know, be in the work in the Beltway for, you know, 3-4 terms and then get a sick lobbyist job. That's all dead now, because even J Street is not coming to help you, because J Street's like, we wash our hands of this. We're not even helping you. Liberal Zionists are not, like, liberal Jews aren't even getting involved in this.
What so we're like, seeing at this point is also doing? Just generally the center just not holding. Like, you see Joe
exactly.
Manchin, you see Kyrsten Sinema disappearing, and like they're actually the breaks when it comes, like, or I mean, they're not.
Well, I didn't bring up Sinema because she's not abandoning shit because she took a bad position on Israel. She just sucks all the way around. She just sucks.
Well, anyway,
yeah.
Well, anything as we go, we're kind of like coming up on time.
No, but, I think I'm good.
All right. Well, cool. Well, you can, listen to Good Morning Comrade every Saturday morning, WHIVLP New Orleans 102.3. Check out our website to get our back episodes, goodmorningcomrade.com. What else? What did I forget?
I think
are you streaming on Twitch?
I'm going to stream tonight. I'm going to stream some of that game. So,
you gonna stream some of that game? I'm gonna have to get that set up. Maybe we can like get
it's
a.
Easy, it's not hard.
Yeah. All right, at some point, maybe not tonight, but soon we can maybe get that rolling.
Good Morning Comrade Radio on Twitch.
Good Morning Comrade Radio on Twitch, and until next time, thank you everybody. We love you. Bye bye. All righty.